I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 595. Panda wants her computer players to be better friends with each other. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi, bro. What's up?
Oh, I'm good. How you doing?
I'm alive.
That's now. Good. You know, you got that breath coming in and coming out like a pro.
Yep. My vision is good. I see things. I hear things. I taste things. I touch things. And I smell things.
Oh, hopefully they don't smell bad.
I mean, that's just part of life, though.
I mean, it is part of bad. Life. You got the good and the bad. You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life.
Yep.
Facts of life.
Oh, man. I'm surprised we haven't gotten a reboot of that.
They're rebooting everything. Can we talk about reboots for a hot fucking second?
Yes, okay. We can.
I'm sorry. Tangent. Like, we're not even 20 seconds.
Tangent alert.
Tangents.
And now we're taking a left on Tangent Ave.
Look, we live on Tangent Ave.
Seriously, I know.
Like, I understand, okay, from a marketer's perspective, okay, I understand rebooting something because it already has, you know, a built-in audience. There's a nostalgia factor, you know, so there's some bankable things. I get it. Okay? I understand the thought process, but not everything on the fucking planet needs to be rebooted. Okay? Like, there's just some things you'd be like, that thing was cool, and let it be. Okay? Like, when they did the new Blade Runner movie, I was like, do we need to do that? And then I watched it, and I was like,
2049 or something like that?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And I was like, did we need to do that? Turns out the answer was no. No, we didn't need to do that.
Well, wasn't it essentially, like, it was a reboot, right? It wasn't like a prequel or sequel or...
No, technically. Okay. So, I know this isn't games or anime, but it's nerdy, so it counts. Technically, it is a sequel. It's not a reboot because it picks up after
the events of the original Blade Runner.
Okay. And I don't want to give anything away. The idea of the plot for the movie was interesting, but it just wasn't needed. Okay, and I'm looking at the landscape now of things that are getting rebooted. I'm excited, actually, for the She-Ra reboot that Netflix is doing. There has definitely been some controversy around, you know, the styling of She-Ra. And frankly, I don't understand it because I think that, you know, you can reimagine a character. Okay, and as long as the core of the world is intact, you know, She-Ra doesn't exactly have to look like down to the pixel as she did in the original cartoon runs that aired, you know, in the mid to late 80s, right? You don't have to do that. But, you know, as long as we're like touching on the same kind of structure, you know, it is an ensemble adventure and Allura's got to deal with some personal battles as well as physical battles out in the world to save the world, then it is still She-Ra, and it's just a new adventure of a new, you know, Allura, and I'm down for that. You know, I think that the reimagining of what My Little Pony was, because I love Friendship is Magic, you know, is great. It's definitely different than the My Little Pony characters that I grew up with a kid.
Oh, you mean the ones that were all dumb as rocks?
They weren't dumb as rocks. They were just very kind, polite, simple ponies.
Simple ponies. Oh, okay. Simple ponies.
And look, it was a simpler time.
With our rocking 80s hair.
All right.
Simple ponies.
They have dope manes. I mean,
I'm not mad at the mane.
But they did that because that was a selling point for the ponies, right? It wasn't necessarily so much about, you know, their cutie marks and what they were supposed to represent. It was they all had different color hair very similar to a Barbie doll that you styled. So they were simpler ponies, okay? And I like that, you know, the reimagining of that was, okay, we're going to create this cartoon series that is definitely going to let us create merchandise, but we're going to do it from a standpoint that is going to allow us to, you know, share some education with kids and ultimately, you know, talk about acceptance and supporting your friends and what friendship really means and should mean. And, you know, it just so happens that not only kids got it, but also some adults who were missing that in their lives and in their worlds also got it. And that's why My Little Pony resonates with people of so many different age groups and racial backgrounds and sexual orientations, and that's a beautiful thing.
I mean, we're seeing that in Steven Universe also, and I mean, and Gravity Falls. We're just seeing a larger demographic appealing to both young kids and older adults who are finding value in there.
But like, so. I've looked up, and it just seems like everything on the planet is getting rebooted. You know, so now on top of that, evidently Rainbow Bright, which. I will come for people if this isn't right. So, you know, on one side, I'm like,
oh no, you were so
great.
You were so pro bright. Like, you were so pro bright as a kid.
Do not fuck
there was,
up Rainbow
there was
Bright.
There was no diminishing Rainbow Bright unless you wanted a kick to your face via my sister.
Oh my god, I will knock your teeth out.
Oh my god. You better get size for dentures right now because I'm coming from them pearly whites. Keep her name out your mouth.
Dude, they're rebooting Rainbow Bright. They already had rebooted Reboot, which it wasn't even remotely close.
It hurt so bad.
It really did hurt. There's continuing conversation about rebooting Gargoyles, which I'm all for.
Because Jordan Peele is thinking about jumping on that project.
Yes. And again, I think that he would have the reverence for it. Ooh. But I still need the original voice cast involved.
Are they all still alive, though?
Yes. It was basically everybody.
It's pretty
TNT.
Much Star Trek.
Yeah. Basically, that's what happened.
It's like
I'm pretty sure that like they were doing the voice work in the same studio. They were just like, come down the hall. Make some more money.
It's like, we got pizzas, so
you don't have to get into makeup. And they were like, check, please. Because Marina Sirtis did a voice. Patrick Stewart did a voice. Brent Spiner did a voice.
Wasn't Data the white-haired elf guy?
He was Puck.
Puck.
Yep, he was Puck.
Hell yeah, Puck was sexy.
You know,
love me a bad boy.
Yeah, and Michael Dorn. Like it was pretty much the TNG cast that did all the voices for the show, and I think that that's also part of the reason why it had such gravitas is because you had such, you know, amazing actors who were doing the voice work. And so they were bringing all of that skill. You know, they were doing these really, you know, socially focused episodes over on TNG. And then they were bringing that exact same gravitas over to Gargoyles. And it was just written very well. You know, to this day, it's one of my favorite, like, Canterbury Tales, Avalonian kind of based and themed shows that I've enjoyed. And, you know, the characters were great, the voice acting was great, the stories were really interesting, and it was just pretty to watch. So, you know, I'm all on board, you know, for Gargoyles being rebooted, especially if Jordan Peele is attached, and double especially if the entire original voice acting group is on board. And hey, voice acting, you can just come as you are into a booth. So I'd imagine that they're all open to doing it, you know, if the thing is fun. So I'm all on board for that. But the landscape, it just kind of seems to me like reboots are the thing that people are going to rather than investing or trying their hand at something new and unique. And that scares me. Because there's a lot of new and unique that's out there that may not be getting light and may not be getting a platform simply because people are more apt to rely on the tried and true thing.
Right.
And it not necessarily flying. Okay.
Well, I mean, like that's, I think that's the case in point. Like, we want there to be something new and relevant for the world scape. But I don't think you have to, I don't think you have to reboot what has already tried and true to achieve that. And I mean, like, but, I said, we get that with Steven Universe, and we're getting that with Star versus the Forces of Evil over on Disney XD, because, you know, I'm an adult and I watch cartoons. So
cartoons are dope.
Like, it's an interesting medium because there's just a lot more things you can convey, I feel. It's a lot easier to do in that medium versus... in
the animation medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then for you'll get in live action. I mean, granted, and we're seeing more and more...
You get to try more, I think, in animation than...
Well, I mean, you can do a lot more things in a practical sense, animation-wild style, as opposed to with human actors.
Like, there was conversation, I believe, that it's died down now. And they're just going to move forward with the Bumblebee movies. But there was a long conversation that was being had about rebooting the Transformers franchise.
Well, I mean,
cartoon-wise and movie-wise. And I was
okay,
like, no.
So I'm gonna state this, because I remember us watching Transformers as little wee girls back in the...
As wee babes.
As wee bairns years ago.
Years.
And then when the Transformers movies came out with all the Michael Bay premise... Eshmom made me buy the Blu-ray DVD because she was like, it's going to be good. And I'm like, are you sure, Mom? And she was like, I'm going to give it a chance. And we bought it, and it's still at the Esh house in its wrap because I never opened it. I have not seen a single movie.
The first Transformers movie was okay. It wasn't like earth-shattering great. It was okay. The derivatives afterwards, they're fun movies if you just turn off...
Your brain?
If you just turn off, you know, the suspension of disbelief thing, right? Like, if you just get out of your head and go, look, I'm going in to watch an action explosion movie.
Okay.
If the only boxes you have to check are, was there action, was there explosions?
Was there explosions? Yes, both.
They're fine movies. Okay, like when I'm not feeling good, I will turn on a Transformer movie once I've gotten through the first season of Fraggle Rock, because that's my go-to when I'm not feeling good. And I will turn one on, and, you know, it's not something you watch for the story. It's kind of like a soap opera, right? You don't watch it for the story. You watch it for the sizzle. Like, who am I going
to
get to see?
I mean,
like,
I watch it to see someone throw water or wine at somebody and
who's
for someone
gonna be
to
fighting
smack somebody.
Who? What's the drama? Exactly. You know,
I mean, that's why I watch K-dramas. I like to watch hot boys kick other boys in the chest sometimes, just because.
And then fall in love with, like, the slightly good-looking chick, but not, like, the insanely hot chick.
The plain girl who seems to have nothing but
with
a heart of fucking gold. Like, it's fucking pure 24-karat gold.
Because I am her. She is me. I have a giant heart of gold, and I'm okay looking.
Why are they so naive, though? Like, why do you have, like, pure heart equals super naive, it seems, to their formula?
Because that's what makes you fall in love with them and be endearing, right? But again, you know, getting back to, you know, the sci-fi space and just, you know, entertainment in general, I think that, you know, reboots have their place, but it just feels like right now everything's getting rebooted, and it's going to go even deeper because... the acquisition deal has been approved, so Disney is getting Fox.
So all the things
are coming back. So Fantastic Four and X-Men are now coming home.
So
the entire Marvel universe.
What I'm hearing is
there's about to be a shit ton of reboots.
We're gonna get a decent storm, but now it can't be Nia Nyong'o because she's the lady in Black Panther now.
You mean Lupita Nyong'o?
Yeah.
And what it means is it can't be Angela Bassett, and that makes me a little sad in my soul because I want mature Storm. I suffered through Halle Berry. The chick that played Storm in the atrocious Apocalypse movie, I think that she did a really good job. And I think that if you were going to do young Storm, like when she was running around with the Morlocks, she's like the perfect person to do that. But I really kind of want the I don't want to say grown and sexy Storm movie, but I do want the grown and sexy Storm movie. And what I mean by that is I want Storm, you know, kind of towards the end of the Uncanny run where, you know, spoiler alert, the professor's gone, Storm and Wolverine have to step up and take over the team. There's some things there between them. Storm goes through an amazing arc, I think, personally for me, at that point, where there's a lot of hard decisions that are made and there's loss and there's a lot of character growth. And I want to see that Storm now. I'm okay. I don't need to, you know, see shy Storm, which Storm was, and to Halle Berry's, you know, credit, Storm was in the kind of early stages of joining the X team, very much shy and deferring to the professor all the time because she wasn't sure of her spot there and if she had earned it and if she was, you know, had the right to be there and really hadn't accepted all of her powers or knew the depth of her powers. So she was quite cautious a lot of the time. And I think that that's what Halle Berry in her performance kind of conveyed on and brought across, which was fine, but I don't want to see that Storm again. I don't necessarily want to see a Morlock Storm, but I'm down to ride if the right person's in place. What I want is, because I think I'm in a more mature place, is I want that more mature Storm. And for me, the perfect casting for that would be Angela Bassett, but she's now the Queen of Wakanda, so...
I mean, you know, she's royalty now.
Right, and it's... But it's not even
well, I mean, royalty granted, now. Like, it's just like we don't even know. We don't even know if she made it through the Thanos snap.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Angela Bassett did a interview, and she basically said that she believes that because T'Challa was snapped up, that she actually remained... You know, as far as the balance, you know, you take one leader, you have to leave any leader, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so she believes firmly that she's there and she is going to use all of the resources of Wakanda to get her son back. Angela Bassett pretty much believes that she survived. But the reason why it can't be Angela Bassett now is because Angela Bassett is known in the universe as T'Challa's mom and Storm married T'Challa.
Right. So unless things got real historical for a moment.
Nah. Wakanda don't work like that. So Angela Bassett now can't be Storm. Right. And Lupita Nyong'o can't be Storm.
Because now she's Nakia? Nakia?
Nakia.
Yeah, Nakia.
And so I'm just like, okay, all right. So those women are out. And there are a lot of other strong women in Hollywood. But, like... The only other person I can think of for me to be, like, my strong, grown and sexy Storm would probably be Viola Davis.
I was about to say, she'd be the next one up, but I don't think...
I can't do that, though, because she's my Amanda Waller, though, in my head.
Yeah. Well, no, I just...
Like, if I can't get CCH Pounder... Me,
aesthetically, if like, I can't in my CCH mind, like, in my mind, when I sit there and I think Storm, like, Storm from my memory, like, if Storm were a human person... I mean, a goddess and, you know, warper of the elements. Like, I imagine, like, high cheekbone, narrow fit. Like, I do see, like, if we could just dye Angela Bassett's hair
white. It's a done deal. It's a done deal. But, and it was white in the movie.
I know. So, like.
And it just hurt my soul even more. I'm like, oh, you just throwing that Storm thing in my face, y'all. You just rude.
Like, you just being an asshole.
You're like, oh, you see this? You can't have it. You can't have it the way you want it. You gotta take it this way. And I will take it this
way. Swallow this hard medicine.
Okay, but it's like a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Y'all could have made her head like red or something. Damn. You just throwing it in my face.
I get it.
But like, I agree, like, the visual aesthetic.
I get it.
I agree with the, you know, the visual aesthetic. And that's why I say, like, as far as like having the gravitas, the next known person I think of is Viola, but to me, Viola is Amanda Waller because they won't let it be CCH Pounder, who, by the way, is the best voice of Amanda Waller in any animated series ever.
Woof.
But, like, you took away my Angela Bassett as my resource for my grown and sexy Storm, and so now I don't know who to go to because it damn sure ain't Jada Pinkett Smith.
No. God, no. No. Mm-mm. Nope. Mm-mm. Nopey, nope. Mm-mm. Nope. Nopey, nopey, nope. Nope. No.
Nobody, nope, nope.
Don't
nope,
get me wrong. Nope. They're a good point. They're good places for Jada to be. I don't
yes.
think. I don't think
she's
any
not Storm.
Of, I don't think any of the Smiths should be in Marvel movies.
Well, here's the thing. I disagree with that. I think that, you know, there's a couple places where I could use Will.
Where?
A couple,
the, in a
okay.
ditch?
Stop it. Stop it.
No, who could he possibly be in the Marvel Universe? Because we have him as, isn't he one-shot in?
Yeah, he's,
Dead Aim or whatever his name was. In, I'm sorry, I wasn't about Suicide Squad.
It's okay. No, I thought
Will Smith was probably
okay
the best thing about that movie and only
Deadshot,
slightly.
By the way.
Headshot, thank you. Headshot.
And I think that he did, you know, a decent job as Deadshot. Where I would use Will is, what's his name?
I don't know.
The guy that came back from the future.
Bishop?
Yeah.
Or Cable?
He could be Bishop. No, no, Bishop. Bishop.
I don't think so.
Here's
Bishop
the thing.
To me is a little bit more
I know,
burly.
I know that Bishop is burly, but here's the thing. Will can beef up.
Yeah, but then you'd have
Bishop,
to give him like a big Jerry curl with long, like, luscious
locks. Here's the reason why
locks.
I say he could be Bishop. Okay, because Bill does a really good job of matching jargon talk with a little bit of humor, but can also bring it down to, like, deadpan, dead-ass serious. And Bishop has to do that. So acting-wise, I think Will could be a really good Bishop.
I don't think aesthetically that would line up well enough,
but here's
though.
The thing. You can't get caught up in the aesthetic, because you're never going to be able to recreate perfectly a character that was drawn on paper, that was drawn completely to be superhuman. You're never going to be able to make a human superhuman. So you have to kind of separate complete aesthetic from the reenactment, and you have to go, who can play this character? What's
okay.
the source of the character? Okay.
Yeah, okay.
And so, because that's the only place that you can be fair. Because if you want to do that, no one who's played any superhero character has ever been able to match the aesthetic that existed in the comic book.
I mean,
Christopher Reeve was not a buff dude.
No.
But he was a damn good Superman.
Hugh Jackman got pretty close, but he was too tall.
He was.
Because Wolverine was tiny. He had
yeah,
Napoleon complex.
That's part of the reason why. Exactly. And that's part of the reason why he had the chip on his shoulder. So, like, you're never going to get somebody to 100% ever match the
But
aesthetic.
He was pretty fucking close, though.
Right. And, like, and he had to do it for 20 years, and that's why he backed down. He was like, yeah, I'm going to be
like,
dad.
He's like, you know what? I'm
bit.
Done.
I'm good.
Done now.
Right? So you kind of have to let the completely match the aesthetic go away. There should definitely be, I think, some visual cues, obviously, that are brought over in anybody doing a live action version of a comic book character. Like, you know, somebody who has the hairstyle right, somebody that has the costume
actually, now that
right,
we're playing this game,
right.
who would be an ideal Rogue for you?
Ooh, that's
hard.
That one's hard. There's okay, so Rogue has to be somebody that can be completely charming. Like, you want to feel for her before you even get to know her. So this is going to be a little bit of a trip, but you got to stay with me.
Okay. I packed my bag. I'm ready to go.
So if she could do the accent, I think Saoirse Ronan could do it.
Oh.
Because
Lady Bird.
Yeah. I think that she could.
Huh.
Because
interesting.
The thing about Rogue that made her so, I think, enticing, enchanting character is that even as she got a little bit older, she still remained very much a teenage girl. Because of her powers, she didn't get to do most of the girlish stuff that most
she
girls
got
to do.
She was stuck in Arrested Development because her powers would kill people.
Right. So she has this kind of duality in her character of just wanting to be a simple girl doing some simple stuff, but also knowing that she has this amazing power. So she has to be a character, and that's why I say if she could do the Southern accent, probably Saoirse Ronan is the first person I would look at to do a Rogue character.
Okay.
You know, and then you age her and you just go with Bonnie Raitt because...
Oh, right, okay.
Because, like...
yeah, makes sense.
You know,
okay.
But, like, on the younger side, I would probably start with a Saoirse Ronan. That's, like, where my brain went first. I don't know that she could do the physicality. But I would also look at a Reese Witherspoon.
Reese could do the Southern accent because she did one for Sweet Home Alabama, and it wasn't too bad on the ears.
And again, she's a character that when you see her, immediately you like her. There's something soft about her that brings you in, and that's something that Rogue always had.
What about Kristen Bell?
I think for me, the only reason why I wouldn't look at a Kristen Bell, and I would say like she'd probably be on the list, she'd be a little bit lower for me, is because I've seen Kristen Bell in other things, and she's just a little bit too diminutive for me for Rogue. I think she could beef up. You know, because Rogue.
Because I mean, like, she's got the sass.
Yeah,
and I think she's got the charm. Because have you not seen The Good Place?
Yeah. She's got the charm and she's got the sass. Like, she can bring that. But Rogue also had some curve to her.
Right. Yeah. She'd have to get thick with two C's.
So I would need Kristen to get a little thicker.
Yeah.
Which I think she could do for sure. So that's why I say she'd definitely be somebody that I think character wise could bring it.
Bring the In-N-Out burgers.
Right. But like Reese already has the curve. And Shirsa already has the curve. You know, so I think that Kristen could absolutely do it. She wouldn't be in my top five, but she'd definitely be in my top 10. Like if I really thought it all the way through and broke it out. Because there's, you know, then you got to start, okay, well, what point in time are we doing Rogue?
Right.
Are we doing Rogue before she, like, actually joined the X-Men and wasn't, like, you know, a sleeper agent for the Brotherhood? Are we doing Rogue down the line? Because, you know, that changes my picks. I don't think that Anna Paquin did a bad job
Rogue. I don't think she did
I don't think that she got enough time to actually be Rogue in anything that we saw. So I would want to see more of her do it, especially now, you know, post True Blood and everything.
Right. And I mean, we already know she could do the accent because True Blood.
She got the curves because we've seen her naked, True Blood.
Yeah. That
like
is true.
A lot.
Yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot.
There's a lot of nakedness there. So yeah, so you know, I mean, we could do whole episodes on just who we cast in these movies, but here's what's going to happen because of, you know, all of these reboots now that are coming. There's going to be a Fantastic Four reboot. They're going to reboot X-Men. And because, you know, it's Fox and now all of Marvel is whole, with the exception of Spider-Man, which is still floating out there over at Sony, you know, I do think that that is going to change kind of the post-Phase 3 superhero movies. All I want is just a few more of the obscure guys to get a chance. And I'm still upset that Inhumans was scrapped and turned into that horrible TV show.
Oh my God.
Instead of being able to be a movie.
I'm really mad because the guy who played Ramsay Bolton was put in that horrible thing, and we know the man can act because he was in Misfits.
Yep.
It hurts.
Yeah. Misfits was dope. Anyway, so I'm going to get off my high horse about reboots. I think we've talked enough about comics and movies.
I agree.
For a hot minute or
for a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, but who's counting? Who's counting?
Not me. But
just my timer on my screen.
How about I now jump in and I talk about a game I've been obsessed with?
How about? Why don't you do that? I'm going to sip some of this delicious, delicious water while you do that.
Okay, great. So we know I love Square Enix and we know I love JRPGs and RPGs
ARPGs. I know what you're doing. Okay, I'm going to sit back for this.
So here's the thing. Because remember, I was very obsessed with Ni No Kuni 2 and was like obsessed with getting all the trophies for Ni No Kuni 2 and spent several months playing nonstop Ni No Kuni 2 to the point that I did, in fact, platinum it. I got all the Achievos trophies. I did it all. I got it. I did all the scrimmages. And it hurt.
You gotta catch them all, and you did.
It physically hurt me getting the last fucking trophy. And I was like, I will never touch this game again. And I was like, I'm going to play light games for a while because I'm not ready to jump into an immersive, highly involved system. And then Octopath Traveler came out, which at first I wasn't going to touch. I saw the trailers for it. I saw some hype for it. And I'm like, this is something I could see myself getting into. But let me not rush. I still have God of War in its plastic wrap that I haven't even
opened. Will you please play that game?
And I still have to. I still have
Jesus
the platinum.
Fuck.
Detroit. And I stopped playing Minecraft altogether. So, I mean, there was a positive in all of this anyway. But
so, at least there's that. But will you please, Jesus, play God of War?
I need to. It's really sad I haven't touched it yet. Oh, so side note on
Lord
that.
Lord of Jesus.
Side note on that, but it's relating to God of War. So, Hot Mess, who we've had on the show a long time ago.
Yeah.
And you've heard us talk about
Hot Mess. It's been a hot minute since we've had Hot Mess.
And so he decided to purchase the 1 terabyte blue PlayStation 4 with the gold emblem on it.
Yes.
Solely for God of War.
Yep.
And he hits me up and he's like, is this too much for this? And I'm like, you will never fill that 1 terabyte PlayStation 4.
No, he won't.
You won't. I'm like, just for God of War? And he's like, yeah, because I want to play it. I'm like, well, you should, because I heard it's good. I haven't played mine yet. But if you're going to get the Big Boom Daddy Blue System, you should possibly also get Uncharted, Resident Evil 7, Tomb Raider.
He should.
These
for
are
sure.
other games that you should use this Boom Fatty system with, and not just God of War. Just
I mean, God of War is going to take up a chunk. Don't get it twisted.
Oh, don't get me wrong, but for one game, no. Here are these other games I know you'll like, Hot Mess. You should also get these if you're going to go that route.
Yeah, definitely.
Granted, he's sitting on my PlayStation 3, so he can give that shit back if he's done. Whatever. Go. I mean, I don't need it. I got a PlayStation 4. But anyway, so going back to my topic. So Octopath Traveler came out a couple of weeks ago. I think it got released on July 13th, shortly after my birthday. And I was like, maybe I'll get it, maybe I won't. And then the playable demo got released on the Switch, which my husband went and got the demo. And he's like, yeah, I kind of played it. It seems kind of interesting. I don't know, though. And I was like, let me just see. I'm just gonna play the demo. And, like,
I'm just going to get my dick wet and see.
Right. Like, I'm just going to put my feet in the kiddie pool, feel refreshed, and then walk away. Well, they did some really interesting things in this demo. So, first of all, they made the demo you had 3 hours in the actual game. And you could do whatever you wanted in the demo. And very much like in the beginning of the game, you have a choice to pick which character you'll start with. Because with a name like Octopath Traveler, there should be an assumption that there are 8 playable characters. And there are. Which is not isn't something that doesn't happen in a standard RPG or JRPG. Because you'll generally get a team of 4 that you can use at a given point in your game, per se. Like, you'll have so many variable characters that you could come in to do things during fights. The people who made Octopath Traveler also did the Braverly series. So Default and Second, which was also an RPG that I bought and played halfway through and stopped because I kind of got bogged down in the UI a little bit, but I digress. So I play this demo, which is, like I said, the first 3 hours of the game, completely available for you to play. And I jumped in, and at hour 1.5, I was like, take my money. Take my money, Square Enix. Just take it. Take it now. And you were able to move over your save data from the demo to your actual game, which is smart. Very smart. Yes, very nice. Because, I mean, jumping into this game, like, of course, this is Panda we're talking about. This is me that we're talking about. And, you know, I looked through all 8 characters before I decided where I wanted to start. And I actually kind of went off of who had the most compelling story. Because each of these 8 characters has their own stories, by the way. And they're broken up into 4 chapters each. So these 8 characters have 4 chapters. So there's like 32 chapters in this game.
Like the 36 chambers of the Wu-Tang?
Yeah. Exactly.
Also, Wu-Tang is for the children.
Wu-Tang.
Please continue.
But anyway, and you go through and you see a little prologue about them. And I chose the one who had the most compelling story from the opening. And that character is Primrose. And she's a dancer. And apparently she was a noble daughter of a house. And her daddy, you know, did some stuff. Did a lot of good stuff. But he also did some bad stuff.
her dad. Why do children always gotta pay for the sins of their parents?
Right? But, like, or apparently he put his nose someplace. He wasn't supposed to put his nose. And then these hooded gentlemen came up into his crib and were like, you weren't supposed to see nothing. Stab, stab, you dead. And, like, she was hiding. So, like, they didn't know. Like, they thought she was, like, away. Granted, if I was a bad guy, I would, like, check the house. You sweep the whole house.
I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, but...
I mean, if you coming in
if you're trying to wipe somebody out, you should make sure there are no witnesses.
Right. You gotta wipe out the whole house. Check everything. Get all the servants. Eat all their cheese. Like, look, do it.
I'm not advocating it, but I'm just saying, like, if you have a job, do your job.
Do your job. But they don't. And they ice her dad, and she sees it all happen. And she's like, and they each have a tattoo of a crow on different parts of their body. Like, one has one on his left arm, one on his right, and one has it on her neck, on his neck. And she's like, I want revenge. I'm gonna get skills. I'm gonna be like Arya from Game of Thrones and become like an assassin.
And this is my needle, and now I'm going after the crows.
Right, exactly. So, like, here's my axe to grind. Let me go get to the blacksmith. And then several years later, she is in this desert town, and she is a dancer, and I also think possibly a prostitute, but they don't clearly clarify.
I mean, you're on the switch, so they're not going to clarify.
She's just a dancer, and she is a part of this troupe who are all owned by this very disgusting man, and he kind of alludes to the fact that she does private dances for him after she's performed on the stage. And, I mean, like, she's just biding her time because she'd gotten word that, like, this one of the guys with the crow tattoo shows up in this desert town, so that's why she goes there first. And because, you know, her whole family's been wiped, like, she ain't rich no more, so, like, now she gotta work. So she works with the best asset she got, which is her assets, if you get what I mean.
Yep.
And,
I'm following.
And she's clearly the prettiest of the group, and most of them don't like her. And then there's the one who has a different color than everybody else, and she's her friend, and you know something's going to happen to her because you got to move the plot along. Like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, of the story so far, she has the most, she has the darkest story to boot right now.
Okay.
And I'm about 45 hours into this game right now. And I'm about halfway through. I think I just about am in the second chapter of each of my characters. There are some things about it, though, that irk me in ways that I wasn't expecting it to.
Well, I have a couple of questions before you get into your irks. You know, sure. is it, you know, your traditional JRPG? It's turn-based, yep, it's party, you're sortying, you're trying to stack people to balance out your team.
Believe it or not, I'm glad that you brought that up. So, let me break this down. So, traditional RPG, absolutely. This is turn-based. This is stat-inclined. All of that. And it actually has a very reminiscent visual style. Like, it is HD 2D is what they're calling it. So, if you can remember Final Fantasy...
Say 7.
No. I'm going to say 6.
Okay.
So, like, it's kind of got that. So, like, your big bosses are, like, literally big pixelated bosses. And you're, like, your little tiny sprites. So, like, it's very, very reminiscent of that traditional look, by the way. But anyway, the thing about, you know, having the right characters in your team, you definitely want to do that. But they actually do this really, really interesting thing in the system. And I know they've done this in later Square Enix games, like, eventually, like, in Final Fantasy X on the Sphere Grid, you were able to give class people alternate classes to be. But you didn't get that until way, way, way later in the game. Like, you were already probably, you had already mastered your main class. And then you would get one or two nodes from the other classes. So it wasn't even, like, a full second build. But in this game, you have your primary class, which is the class that you start as, whichever one of the characters that you are. And then they recommend, and I do have to go with this recommendation that I've seen from several reviews and in my own personal experience through playing the game, you do get the ability to have a secondary class, and if you find the shrine with the artifact that allows you to unlock it, you could equip it earlier than that, but it really doesn't do you, the player, any good until you've mastered at least your primary class, because then you're a boom daddy this, and then you can be a weaker X, Y, or Z while you're, you know, leveling that up. And they kind of make it so the four characters are kind of the opposites, the polar opposites of themselves. So you have your four rogue characters, which I'm not sure why they go with rogue for the terminology, but you have a hunter, your dancer, your thief, and your, what's the other one? Your scholar. And, okay. And these guys, like, they all have these different path abilities that they can do additional things in town. Like, the dancer can allure people to fight for her so that she, because she's fairly weak in terms of physical, mm-hmm. but she's got magic powers. But, like, she'd be like, hey, strapping soldier who's, like, got that,
she got that booty magic.
You want to come fight with me? And, like, you can lure them. But all of those path abilities for the rogues are mirrored in the noble characters, which are the other four characters that you could possibly have. And you can actually dual class each of them their opposite. So you can have a well-balanced party either way.
Okay.
So, like, it really does... And you can map people to different things altogether, but depending on their stats, like, it may not be wise to path your merchant to be a warrior because she doesn't have the hit points to be a tank. So, like, you wouldn't necessarily do that unless you were going to find all the right things to beef her up. But, like, they do give you an easy way to dual class people so that you have a fully balanced team whenever you are traveling the world.
That's interesting.
It's actually, like, I'm really kind of into all that because literally as soon as I started getting into it, I was like, okay, I'm like, I want to have two full balanced teams so that depending on whose chapter I'm playing, if I have to, you know, if, because there are certain characters that won't engage with certain quests because it's completely against their alignment, which kind of makes some sense. Okay. So in some cases, my black mage, my scholar, Cyrus, doesn't want to partake in a mission. So I have my apothecary, Alfin, also dual classing as a scholar. So, and he'll come along because he's just happy to be there. So I can have my dark mage, even though I don't have my primary dark mage. The combinations are endless in that. Now, the sucky thing, because I do want to bring this up. So your protagonist, whoever the first character is that you choose when you play this game, can never leave your party. Ever. They're forever locked in.
Okay, which is that sucky?
So, think about it. So, like I said, I picked Primrose and she's a dancer. And I've also alluded to the fact that she has very weak physical attack.
Yep, so you always got to carry a tank.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, you're going to carry a tank anyway. You want someone who can take those heavy hits. Like, that's fine. But every time I go to a new town and I start a new chapter for somebody, I can only swap out two other people in my party because Primrose is forever locked into
the team.
Which
means you really forever have a tank locked.
Well, I mean, I have... Well, technically, she is more of a... She's a support class. Unless she has lured someone who has, like, a high attack. But she's actually one of the most difficult characters to play,
right? So you
picked
the hard path to start.
I did. Because her story was the most compelling. So they tricked me. Because at first I was like, oh, I'm like, I'll just find a sword. And then I find a sword and it's like, no, this is Primrose. She can't carry a sword. She can only carry daggers. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? No, that's it. Unless you subclass her, which I'm subclassing her with my cleric. So now she has a staff. But like, she still maybe hits for like 2 damage. And I'm like, bitch, just keep to your dark magic. Shake your booty. Buff my team. No point in ever holding a weapon.
Booty buff.
Right? So apparently she is far more, she's probably one of the most difficult characters to balance and play. And of course, I pick her off the bat. And
right.
I don't.
Because you like it rough.
Apparently. But like, I didn't realize that she was difficult. Like, I just thought that this was like how the game played. And then when I met my tank, and, like, he's mowing through people. I'm like, shit, these battles that were taking me, like, 30 minutes to kill a level 1 slug took him, like, 2 hits. It's like, Primrose, you need to bulk up. Do some more squats or something. Eat some
Don't
protein.
Don't skip leg day.
Right? So, but I mean, and the map is so, like, there are so many interesting things in this game. And, I mean, I'm not saying that this game is doing anything new in the realm
random
of
encounters.
RPGs.
Please tell me no random encounters.
No, there are random encounters.
Damn.
However, you have two of your classes that have latent abilities that will either intensify or completely absolve them to the point where they don't happen. So, like, if you have that equipped early on, you won't have a random encounter. at all. But like I said, this game is not doing anything new or revolutionary, but it is refreshing, enchanting, and very immersive, and it's huge. Like, when I played Final Fantasy X, like, you know, you don't get the map until fairly later, and then by the end of the game, you pretty much have a ship that allows you to pretty much hot travel everywhere. And in this game, you can only hot travel or fast travel between major towns. So, like, if you have to go to a cave that's outside of the town, if you know where the town is, like, that's great, but you still have to explore. And, like, you can walk wherever you want in this game. Like, this game is not like, you can't go here. But be warned that there are high-level woods and caves near low-level towns. So, like, I was walking down the street with my party, we're all level 12s, feeling full of ourselves, and I walk into a wood, and I'm not paying attention to the danger level, because it flashes the danger level on the lower left of the screen when you walk into an area. And I didn't notice this off the bat, because, you know, I don't pay attention to situational awareness, is not my forte. And I walk into a level 45 wood, and got murdered, viciously, in the matter of seconds. And it's like, damn, wish I had known that.
Yeah, that would cause some problems.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, but and I think one of the other things there's kind of a takeaway for me is, like, when you go to the map, it doesn't, there's no moniker or there's no, like, indication of these danger woods on the map. It just shows you that there are woods there. So I'm like, okay, I know that's a wood, but is that, like, an a level danger 11 wood that I could just get through? Or is this like a 45, don't go here, only go where the light touches kind of scenario? So, like, you're kind of taking some risks sometimes, but there are some heavy rewards for those risks if you're willing to take them. But like I said, I'm 45 hours in, and most people are clocking just for a critical path, like not doing all the additional things, which this is me we're talking about, so you know I'm going to do those. We're clocking in at about 80 hours just from start to finish of chapters and not the additional stuff. And other people have been clocking well over 120 because of all the additional.
So traditional RPGs, JRPG.
Yeah. So, and
let
I'm
me ask
going
you this.
And I'm
let
gonna I'm this. Gonna credit I'm gonna do all of it. So
let me ask you this. So as far as, you know, RPGs go, and
yes,
JRPGs go, when you're looking at, you know, the ability to dual class your characters, the art style overall of the world, the basic open sandbox, mm-hmm, that's there. Would you say that Octopath is a good RPG for people who have never played an RPG to play first? Or should they go other places, and why?
See, this is really kind of a hard answer for me, because I feel like, if you walked into this game and only chose four characters, because, like I said, the rogue characters are a little bit harder to play because, mm-hmm, of their elements. So if you went and only picked up, because, I mean, you don't even have to pick up all eight characters, by the way. Like, you don't have to have them all. You can choose to or not. But if you went in and only got the noble characters, which are the cleric, the warrior, the merchant, and the apothecary, like, they are all very easy to play and understand their play styles. They are easier to learn. And I think because I have all eight characters, I'm going through all eight of the stories. So, like, if someone came in and said, I'm only going to play the noble characters, then that game with just the noble characters and their stories, I think would be a great introduction to turn-based traditional RPG.
Okay.
But the inclusion of the rogue characters and then having eight unique storylines with eight different subclasses, I mean, eight classes, and then each of them subclassing, and then there's even advanced classes on top of that, could really convolute the system. So I would say someone who's a little bit more experienced in playing traditional RPGs, if they went in and picked up all eight characters and were aiming to get to that advanced level, that then it'd be a far more challenging RPG, and that'd be something that I would want someone who's played them and understands that concept, because there is a little bit of a learning curve in the beginning, because the, I think it is, who is it? It's Acquire. Acquire worked with Square Enix when they were doing this game and stuff, that the Acquire team also did Bravely Default, and they like to tweak their fundamentals a bit. In Bravely Default, you use a lot of, you use the default system, which was kind of like a boost for your abilities and stuff, and the timing of your default would lead to success or failure, so it kind of added another thing on top of that. And Octopath has a similar system with the boost system, which I didn't talk about here. It really depends on you coming into the game. Like, if you want a simple enough game, you could play this game as simply as you want. And if you wanted to add more challenges, that would be up to your personal preference. So, I mean, okay. I think it's approachable, but I feel like some people would just jump into it and thinking everything that they learned would be something they'd have to do, and then they would get overwhelmed with all of that stuff on top of them if they're not used to it.
Okay.
All right,
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, it does.
But it's beautiful.
That's also good advice.
It's beautiful as all get out in terms of the visuals. Like, when you go to the beaches, like, literally they have, like, this texture that literally looks like golden glitter. And, like, ooh, I was like, that's really pretty. And the water's really pretty. And in the snow levels, they have, like, silver glitter. And, like, it's pretty. I'm like, someone spent a lot of time making this bedazzled as fuck.
But in all honesty, what JRPG have you played that wasn't pretty?
Enchanted Arms? Enchanted Arms was
that,
probably...
That was quick.
I mean, that's the easy one. That's the kill shot. No, and I mean... Yeah.
But wouldn't you say, like, good-looking environments and characters and summons is a hallmark of a good JRPG? And really the genre in general?
Now, when you say summons, what do you mean?
Well,
the only JRPG
that I've ever played has been Final Fantasy, so Aeon summons.
Okay, so because in Octopath Traveler, they actually take a really unique idea. They take a different spin and direction on summoning, because the dancer, Primrose, and the cleric, Ophelia, have a path ability that allows them to allure people to fight for Primrose. And in Ophelia's case, because she is the polar opposite, she's the noble variation of the dancer, per se, and she's the resident big heel, she can guide people and summon them onto battle. And then The warrior and the hunter also have a summon... Well, no. The hunter the warrior doesn't necessarily have it. But the hunter also has a summon ability where she can summon animals that she has captured. She's kind of the resident Pokemon trainer. And she can capture animals in the forest and have them fight for her. So, like, you're actually not dealing with summoning in a, like, magic perspective in this game. They actually keep it really, really kind of close to humanity as possible. I mean, outside of, like, the dark magic and light magic. But, like, they don't go into, like, the, you know, we don't have a shrine maiden who has to, like, give up her life to summon this magical Aeon to kill, like, Dad Jesus. Like, we don't have that. We don't have that happening in this game. A lot of the stories are very contained and very, believe it or not, all of their stories are relatively small in scope. Like, several of them have revenge plots. One guy, the warrior guy, Ulbrich, has forgotten what his purpose in life was, because he was a knight for a king who got murdered, and he lost everything, and he kind of went into hiding, and he kind of lost his direction, so he's just trying to find himself in the world. And you're like, oh. Like, these are all very personal stories that I think people can find parts of themselves in, and I think that's another thing that people are, like, gravitating towards in this game. But with that, some of their vocal choices are so grating to the ear that they hurt.
So talk to me about these characters. Like, what are the 8 characters and what are their stories? And
then
whose voice doesn't match who?
Okay, so we've got my girl Primrose, and she's the dancer. She's part of the Rogue Four, because her allure ability has a rate of failure, and that can tarnish their reputations when they're in towns, which I didn't talk about a little bit earlier. Like I said, her daddy got murdered. She saw it. She wants vengeance. So that's kind of her path point. Then you have Therion, and he is your thief. And he's kind of like the gentleman thief, kind of, like, has a snazzy enough voice. But
he's a Lupin-type character?
Sort of. And he sounds like he watches a lot of anime all day.
So he's a Lupin character.
He lives in one-liners all the time. Mm-hmm. He was living in a thief town. Like, literally everyone in this town is a thief. They're always stealing. And, like, this rich dude shows up one day and, like, super guards his house. He's like, no one can break into my house. And Therion's like, oh, yeah? And he goes and he breaks in. And they, like, they capture him and they put this weird band on him that, like, marks him as, like, the dumbest thief to ever thief. And they're like, we were just trying to find the best thief who could break into this house because we need you to go get stuff that got stolen from us a long time ago. So now he's kind of like a thief for hire, like a mercenary uh-huh. thief for this particular family. And they won't remove this band to restore his honor until he's collected these other additional things, like they're these weird spheres. So he has to travel all around the world to find these, hopefully find these spheres to return them to this bitch who trapped him. Like, he got caught. He got to do a favor.
He didn't pay attention to Admiral Akbar.
Right.
Because it was a trap.
So he got caught in a trap, and now he's just trying to, you know, pay his penance and get out. So that's him. Then you've got Hanit. And Hanit, okay.
How do you feel about this character?
Okay. So Hanit's the hunter. Okay. And, like, she
Hanit
has
the hunter.
Yes. So believe it or not, all of their names.
Darion the thief.
Hanit the hunter,
uh-huh.
Primrose the dancer, Ophelia. So actually, if you put all their names out, it spells Octopath. Like someone thought they were being funny. But yep. But then you have Hanit, and Hanit's the hunter, and she lives out in the woods with, like, her noble, like, woodland people. They all talk in old Shakespearean dialect all the time,
right? Because they're old nobles.
Like, thou, thither, this, old with an E, like, random E's on the back of
yes.
words,
yes.
stuff, color with a U. But, like, it is, like, opening
King's
night.
English. Got it.
Yeah. And, like, and she has a really noble voice, so if you took, like, Xena Warrior Princess and then made that Shakespearean times 8, that's what she sounds like. And, like, every time she talks, I'm like, I really wish you wouldn't. Like, I can't get over it. Because, like, Primrose, like, coming from a noble house, like, her voice commands a presence. Like, that makes sense to me. And Ophelia has, like, a soft and demeaning voice because she's, you know, a cleric and she doesn't really hit things, but she makes things feel good. So, like, she has, like, that kind of texture to her voice. And then Hanit, which, because she lives out in the woods and, like, literally, she literally looks like the Starks. Except there's no snow where she's at. But, like, she wears the pelts. She wears okay, the yeah. leather.
As
she
a hunter has, would.
Her teacher has a dire wolf for a pet companion. So, like, but I imagine, like, when I think of, like, woodland people, like, I imagine very, not necessarily gruff dialect, but I would imagine not a polished one.
Okay.
Because they're not noble. They're just...
But she is a noble character.
Like,
said.
She just has a lot of pride, and I think that's where that comes from. But, okay. like, when I hear her, and she's like, I do not know of the menfolk, hither thou cometh. And I'm like, shut up, Hanit. Shut up. Just throw your arrows. Send your wildebeest in. I don't need to hear you talking about this. And, like, I don't put her in my party a lot, because I don't like listening to her one-liners, because they just grate on my soul. Then you've got Tressa. Tressa's your merchant. She's also, like, 12, maybe 14.
Okay.
And she comes from a merchant town, like, off of a port. So, like, she's a businesswoman through and through. So all of her one-liners have to do with, like, business. So she's like, let's get down to business. Or, the shop's closed. Like... It's like, you
I was
going to
say,
you owe
if
me
she says,
tax.
Let's get down to business, yeah. do you often finish the sentence with, to defeat the Hun?
Yes. To defeat
Hunnit.
The Huns. Hwah! Yes. Okay. I've done that a couple times.
Okay.
But, I mean, she's got a very childlike voice, and, like, her story is really, I've been in this town my whole life. I'm a merchant because my parents are merchants. I want to be a merchant, but I also want to explore. So I'm going to kind of defy my parents and leave the shop and just become a traveling merchant, even though I'm, like, 12/14 and, like, uh-huh. have not really experienced life, and I'm just gonna follow these.
So she's taking the Ash Ketchum approach to life.
Kind
Got
of.
It.
Except Ash Ketchum was like, I'm just gonna go all by myself. Tress is like, hey, random 7 strangers who came into this town, hear my story, now I'm gonna follow you. And that's kind of what happens.
Okay.
So there's Tressa. Like I said, there's Ulbric. He's the warrior. He's the one who was a royal knight for this old, old royal family and the king. And the king's right-hand man, oh no, kind of like Jafar, decided to overthrow the king and killed the king and, like, destroyed the kingdom. And Ulbric was like, I have no purpose anymore. So he's just trying to figure himself. He's just trying to figure out who he is now in the world.
He's just trying to find his place in the world.
Right.
Understood.
He's trying to he's trying to find reasons to pick up his sword. So that's really his story. And it's not nearly as compelling, really. And then you have Alfin, who's the apothecary. And I like Alfin a lot. He is like the bumpkin of the group. He's the apothecary. And he lives in this small little town. He's not the only apothecary in town. Like, his best friend is also an apothecary, and I also think they are in love with each other. Mm. Beautiful, beautiful man love. Like, some of their dialect, I'm like, will you just kiss already? Like, I'm just waiting for it to happen. And Alfin's story is he really looked up to his best friend's father, who was the big apothecary for their town. And, like, he traveled the world, learned all these techniques, and became this renowned healer. And then all of a sudden, he just went out into the world and never came back. And both of them have kind of been looking up to this image of this father type. So he's trying to follow in this footsteps without having any clear direction. He just wants to be the best healer and help people. So that's why he is traveling in the world. And then last but not least, we have Cyrus. Cyrus is your scholar. So he's your black mage, essentially. And he is the tutor to the royal family in Alstrom, which is a town. And he's super attractive, but he's totally about his career right now and, like, doesn't even really see women as women type. So, so he's, like, an insta-flirt all the time and, like, he's always breaking hearts and doesn't realize he's breaking hearts at all. His beginning story is probably the most boring ever. He is giving a lecture to the two royal princesses of Alstrom. One of them has the hots for him, like, clearly, and one is really shy and quiet and also has feelings for him, but can't say anything. Not that they really should anyway.
Right.
But anyway, he gets permissions to finally go into, like, the secret archives where all the really boom-fatty tomes are. And, like, Cyrus has been waiting for years to get into this, like, library to read these books and shit.
So yeah, he's about, like, to get his learn on real deep.
Right, yeah. So he's like, oh, man, after this tutoring thing, I got to get to this library because they finally gave me access. And he gets in there, and there's a book he's looking for, and it's not there. And someone stole it. And he wants to find this tome. But while that's happening, one of the princesses was like, hey, princess sister, I'm also, like, really about this guy, and I'm going to tell him how I feel. So the quiet one was like, oh, fuck, you're not. And she goes to Cyrus's boss, and he's like, he, like, flirts with the princess all the time, and I don't think it's appropriate. Like, she kind of wanted to get Cyrus in some trouble.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, when you're the princess, you can't just be throwing accusations like that.
Right.
Because then they're like, okay, so we could kill him, or we could exile him from the town. And she was
That's
like,
what happens when you call the cops on black people.
Right? I mean, Cyrus ain't black, but it's just like, he said some shit to the princess. Like, but
the princess called 911 because he was reading while an apothecary, like a scholar, and now
he was reading a book to the princess and she blushed. So, like, he clearly is, like, setting her up. He's clearly leading her on. But anyway, so the headmaster's like, look, we can either arrest you, put you in exile, or you could go on a sabbatical for an indeterminate amount of time.
Uh-huh.
So Cyrus is like, all of those lies are balderdash. And he talks like that, too. He uses a lot of weird old slang. He's like, uh-huh, that's poppycock and balderdash, and I shouldn't have to do that, but I understand. So, you know, I'll just go do some research out in the field. And he finds out that one of the big boom daddy tomes from the thing got stolen, like, 15 years ago. And he's like, I'm going to go find this book because I have nothing better to do. So, like, some of
I'm on sabbatical, bitch.
I'm on sabbatical. Yeah. So, I mean, some of their stories, like, of the eight, like, they're decent enough and you can get enough out of it, I'd say. But some of them are so much more intriguing than the others. Like, Primrose's is far most the darkest theme so far.
Uh-huh.
Because, like I said, I'm in her second chapter right now, and she found an old friend from her noble days. And her friend that she finds is part of a brothel that's owned by one of the crow guys. So, you know, she had to go up in there and kill the crow guy. And now she is, like, freed all the hoes. But now the hoes kind of want to, you know, travel and, like, support Primrose. So, like, she kind of became...
Hey, man,
she
could have kind of traveling. What you gonna do?
She could kind of become a pimp now. Because they're all like, we would do anything for you. You saved
madam.
Us.
She's a madam.
Right.
She's a lady.
I'm just saying, she comes in and she helped the hoes. She's Captain yeah. Save the Ho.
Is she taking their money, though? Because if she's not, then she's not a pimp.
Well, I mean, no. I okay. don't think so.
But so then like, she's just
the
manager.
When she goes back to the town and she goes to the dormitory where the ladies are kept, like, they all just be hanging out, like, we're so glad you're back. Do you want us to do anything for you? And it's like, stop, ladies. You're free now. You have free will. You can do what you want.
Look, she's just a manager of some independent talent.
You know? But, I mean, I think... The biggest attraction, because, like I said, like, some of the voice acting grates on me a little bit. The protagonist or your first character always being locked in your party kind of grates on me. And then this is the one that really kind of sits with me the worst.
Is this the one that really grinds your gears?
This one hurts me the most. Because the great thing about RPGs was always the character interactions between the parties. Which you got. Like, you... The characters would eventually, like, while they were on travels, they would talk to each other, and, like, you would... they would figure out why they were together in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And there's very little of this. Like, when you are doing a chapter for a character in a town, you do get the option to do travel banter, where whoever story it is will talk to the other three. But, like, they don't talk while they're just walking through the world. So, like... Unless they're in a town, they don't talk to each other. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Because that was one of the things I really liked, like, in Final Fantasy X in particular. Like, I'd be sitting mm-hmm. there fighting, like, birds with Auron. And if I had Titus in the party, Auron would be like, you need to have better form, Titus. Like, he'd be calling me out on my shit. And, like, mm-hmm. characters would be playing against their character types. And, like, you would feel like, okay, this group makes sense. Like, these are now all friends. Like... Walk is madly in love with Lulu, so, like, of course, while he's throwing his ball, he's all like, hey, Lulu, how you doing? What up? You awake? Like, they would interact more, and they don't do that in this game at all. Like, these are essentially eight people who are just walking down the path and just happen to go to the same towns and help fight sometimes. There's a little lack of connection between the eight of them, and there's enough of them, so, like... I don't know why we don't have, like, camp scenes with them all around fire and, like, you hear more exposition about their stories and their pasts and stuff. Like, that could have been an interesting thing that they could have done, but they chose not to. But overall, well-balanced game. I do thoroughly enjoy it. It does lack in some things, but still, all the things that it does well, it does exceptionally well. So, like, I'm gonna play 120 hours. That's gonna happen. So, yeah. And that's it. That's what my life has been for
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. We are getting close on time, so
I'm
not gonna talk. No, it's fine. I let us off into tangent town anyway, so I really did it to myself, which is cool. But I do want to touch really quickly on just a couple of anime that are out and about in the world, and if you haven't had a chance to jump into them, you should. As you guys may or may not know, Attack on Titan Season 3 has started officially. I'll be talking in depth about episode 1 next week on our podcast because I really want to spend some time on it. But if you have not yet seen Attack on Titan and you like your animes dark, gory, and action-packed, Attack on Titan is definitely one that you should watch for sure. There's also been a couple of series that have shown up on Crunchyroll in their full run entirety, so they're bingeables, which is great, that I think are really interesting that you probably want to check out. The first one that I'm going to recommend is going to be one called Gossick, G-O-S-I-C-K, like go sick, Gossick.
Mm-hmm.
It is a whodunit, so mystery-based anime with a loli as its main protagonist. I really enjoy it because I think it's quite cleverly crafted. It has a really good mix of lightheartedness with the darkness of solving murder mystery. So I'd put it kind of in the same category as Mythical Detective Loki Ragnarok. And it's just beautiful to look at, which doesn't suck from my perspective. And then the other bingeable that I think is definitely worth watching is Code Geass is back. And not only is the full run available, so both season one and season two, but also the special OVA that they did, which technically takes place after season two, which is a 6-episode OVA, and most of the episodes are about 1 hour and 10 to 1 hour and 20. Definitely worth a watch. Very action-packed. Very, I would call, sharp animation style.
Mm-hmm.
And just interesting characters. So you have a balance of power struggle with mecha and fantasy all wrapped into one. And if you watch both season one and two and the OVA, you're looking at, you know, a good 60-episode run. So a nice long weekend bingeable.
If you're
looking for that. And then finally, the last one that I have is Overlord, which we've talked about before on the show, season one. Season two is now available in its full entirety, and they just started season three. So I'm glad to see that Overlord got additional seasons, because I'm still waiting for that Roka and the Six Brave second season. I'm holding out my breath. I'm starting to turn blue because of it, but I'm still hoping. Overlord is really interesting because it's another in the line of modern-day person trapped in video game kind of scenario. So, similar to Log Horizon, Sword Art Online, the difference being with Overlord, the character who gets trapped in the game is basically logging in to this game that they spent a lot of time, more than 120 hours in, on the last day when the servers were about to come down. And so he's there in the guild that was built by all of his other, like, super high-level people with their characters, and is trying to stay there until midnight when the servers are going to go offline. And of the few people that returned just to kind of do the last hurrah before it goes, he's actually there after midnight, a minute after midnight, and goes to log off and can't find the log-off button. And so he's stuck in the world with the NPCs and starts to realize very quickly that he's actually truly stuck in the world. He has his knowledge of the game, which is an Yggdrasil-based game. So that lore comes in a lot, I've found, in the trapped-in-game animes. And basically is this young guy who doesn't have experience with, you know, the fairer sex, desperately trying to figure out now how to navigate this world as a supreme being being worshipped by all of the sub-characters that were created by his previous friends. And they remember all of their creators as creators and golden ones and, like, their golden hall, and so he has access to all their weapons and things, and is, like, this supreme being trying to find his way in the space and navigate, like, you know, a succubus that desperately just wants to bone him with all these other characters that want to take over the world, and trying to navigate that in a way where, like, his sensibilities are, you know, don't do harm unless you have to, but also, like, I'm in charge, so I kind of got to be this leader, and I created this bombastic character who's, like, the antithesis of me, and now how do I become that? So it's a very interesting kind of duality character anime, which I really like, and it's just fun to watch how these different characters that very much mirror characters that, like, I would create if I was going through a character creator go through in an anime series. So, Super Bingeables, Overlord Season 1 and 2, Code Geass, and definitely Gothic. Super check them out. You will have a great time across the board, especially if you're into fantasy and you like some of the things to be a little lighthearted, but also you're not afraid of a head being lopped off or two or four or ten, and Attack on Titan's back. So I'm going to talk about that incessantly. Be prepared. And that's okay. All I'm going to say. So it's time to wrap it up. I hope you enjoyed this episode of our podcast. If you did, please make sure that you subscribe. You can get our podcast in iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also listen to our podcast on our website, electricsisterhood.com. I highly recommend, highly recommend that you bookmark our site. That way you can keep up to date with all the great content that our team is producing. Reviews, previews, news, and more on the site. You can interact with us on social. You can find us on Instagram at ESH News. You can also find us on Twitter at ESH News and on Facebook, facebook.com/Land of Esh. We share a lot of great content there, including articles, some memes that we're creating, fun stuff that we're seeing around the web. So please make sure that you check out and subscribe to all of our channels. Give us a double tap and give us some feedback. If you like what we're posting or you got something to say or there's something that you want us to cover in a podcast, hit us up on any of our social channels and let us know. Also share us with your friends so that way we can no longer be the best kept secret on the internet. And if you like what we're doing on our site and on our social streams, then please make sure that you check out all the great content creators that are part of the Esh family. That includes our homie KBD, King Baby Duck, over at b3crew.com. He puts out his show bi-weekly, No Borders, No Race, where he's spinning some great music from artists that you know and a bunch that you don't. So please make sure that you check out his site and his podcast. He's recently done some great interviews with some really interesting artists, including Frank Turner. So please make sure that you check him out. And a site, bookmark it as well, and get that podcast in iTunes or through the site. There's also our homie Hamsterman2049 holding it down at smashrook.com and streaming every Wednesday at 9 Eastern on Twitch. You can catch the link on our Facebook page and also on his website to see what he's playing. Join them in chat live and be part of the process. It is an absolute fun time. My favorite is human outside of my sister and my husband.
Aww.
Bill the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review, my favorite recap show on YouTube. Definitely give him a subscribe. Check out his recaps. Be part of them live so you can either call in or be in chat. Any way you slice it, it is a absolutely fantastic time and show. Please make sure that you check him out. Throw him a subscribe. Visit his site, issuesprogram.com, to check out his archive as well as some of his written editorial pieces. And then last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that Nerd craves. So whether it's comic books, movies, TV, anime, manga, games, you name it. If it's nerdy and we're talking about it, then they're talking about it over at nerdcrave.com. So please subscribe to all of our sites, get our feeds, share all of our stuff on social, share us with your friends, hit us up and let us know if there's a game or an anime that you want us to review or talk about on any of our platforms, and we'll give you a shout out when we do. So with that, it's time to call this one toast. I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time,
titties.